with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. A minute past the hour. It is the third day of October 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Well, most of the time. Right now, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is an error message. Yo, well. Hopefully that will be remedied sooner rather than later. But, up on my Facebook page and in my Twitter feed, you can find links to the chat room and the streams, and it'll be easy, easy, easy. Of course, none of this really matters to you if you're on a smart iDroid device, tablet, what's it, and you can use the TuneIn Radio app or the Stitcher Internet Radio app or Utunes, or a number of others are still on Roku devices, Dart.fm, a whole bunch of places. We're just, you know, out and around. And like I said, in which case the absence of the website's not that critical. It does kind of make it rough on fundraising, in as much as the PayPal button, along with the rest of the website is gone. It'll be back. It will be back. In the meantime, however, we do still have Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge on the table. And if you want to participate in that and double your money, we got, thanks to Joseph, and thanks to, we got, let me just double check. I don't want to leave anybody out because you all are what makes this continue to go. Yes, thanks to Steve and to Joe last night, we have gotten Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge down to $160 to go. If you want to contribute via PayPal, The same email address that is attached to the PayPal button is simply my email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com. If you go to PayPal and send money, yada, 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 and use that email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and no other, it will get through just fine. And frankly, we're off to a rough start for the first of the month. Because folks can't find the PayPal button. But anyway, we will muddle through one way or the other, and hopefully the website will be back up sooner rather than later. Ben said he hopes to get to it this weekend. Nonetheless, this here is, in fact, Friday on the front porch. Honest to God, I think it is I think it's something that folks look forward to. I don't know. I think Moran Monday and prayer meeting Wednesday and Friday on the front porch all run pretty well neck and neck as to popularity. But we have a Jim Dandy good time on Friday on the front porch because we get the extraordinary ordinary roundtable up and running and rousing and rocking and rolling. So if you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the Front Porch, and again, I know of no similar program out there. I don't know where just, you know, we have a group conversation, or anyone does. The right-wingers would certainly never do that, because you can't let the poo-flinging monkeys get too, you know, full of themselves. So if you would like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, all you have to do is send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype. And we'll take it as read that you're familiar with Skype. Just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk on Skype, and you and he'll clear you, and we'll get you into the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, lickety-split. So stand not upon the order if you're going, but go at once. Don't waste any time. Good evening to everyone in the chat room. I'm sure more folks will wander along shortly. We're not real punctilious, or, you know, we don't take attendance or anything, so people get there at their own speed. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker. Good evening, John, Jug-a-Punch, and M. Brandt, and, of course, Sparky in there moderating even as we speak. I think we're going to have fun this evening, because there's an abundance of stuff to go into. Some grimmer than others. Of course, you know that, I fear that ISIL are succeeding beyond their wildest dreams with their brutal tactics. They say they have decapitated another human being in the name of their all-merciful God, of course. The same all-merciful God that's, you know, Yahweh, Jehovah, God, Christian God, you know, big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. And they say they're getting ready to, they claim that they have beheaded a citizen of the United Kingdom, a subject, and that they are getting ready to behead a citizen of the United States. And we, of course, are having a straight-up plum conniption. And I hate to say it, but it looks like the war drumbeat is being rather more successful than anyone might want or hope. I don't want it, and I hope I'm wrong. But it's kind of hard to avoid the notion that at some point in time, somebody's sons, somebody's daughters, somebody's mommies and daddies, brothers and sisters, cousins, neighbors, aunts, uncles, will be back in the gritty, sandy meat grinder, the sun-baked abattoir that is that neck of the woods. No woods, that area of the world, that tortured, tormented, sad area of the world. And it'll cost us, you know, a few bajillion dollars a day, while, of course, we don't have money to let hungry people eat on more than a dollar a day here in the United States. Via the miracle that is the Internet, I was watching a little TV this morning, and lo and behold, and this is one of those moments when what's not said, it's kind of like music. There's, you know, the silence between the notes is music too. Or more particularly, given the topic and what have you. It's like that old joke about the little kid who said, Daddy, what's that little black speck in the middle of the bird poop? The father looked at his son and said, Son, that's bird shit too. I happen to, I shouldn't, but I do. Through the miracle of the internet, I happened to watch Morning Joe today. And they had a fascinating little discussion because they had a color-coded demographic map of Europe. And the purpose of the map was to display lifespans. And in Italy and France and Spain, lo and behold, and parts of England, lo and behold, lifespans are rising up into the 90s now. It's a little less so in Germany. And it was all, you know, green was good, red was bad. And by the time you got over into Eastern Europe, it was a lot of pink and some stuff that was just blood red. And Germany was even kind of pinkish. And then they put up on display another graphic, this one of the United States of America. And there was not a single green state. Okay, no, there was one. And it was a very, very pale green, and that was Minnesota. Okay, no, wait. Hawaii was greenish, too. Everywhere else, red, pink. Even California. And so the two hosts of the program sat there and looked at each other and said, why could this possibly be? How is it that we're the greatest country in the world? And we have a lower lifespan than them socialists over in the Europe. And so the two hosts bantered back and forth, one saying, well, you know, I think our diet is not so good. And the other host responded, yeah, we probably don't eat real well, and I think we work too hard. And we don't stop to smell the roses and really appreciate life. You know me, right? You know where my head was already. Hey, look! Those countries that are kind of greenish over in Europe, they've actually got laws to try to deal with climate change. They've got laws to deal with pollution on a far more proactive level than anything the United States does. Gee, I wonder why the Gulf Coast of the United States is blood red to the point of being nearly purple. I wonder why Central Appalachia is blood red to the point of being nearly purple. I wonder why lifespans, life expectancy is declining and not increasing throughout the entire southeastern United States, and in particular among women. I wonder why it is that in McDowell County, West Virginia, the life expectancy of a man is on a par with that of someone in Haiti and is actually lower than, say, a campesino in Guatemala. I wonder why it is that we have an infant mortality rate that is commensurate with that of Libya. You see, I don't think you can blame smoking and gravy eating for all of that. Not and be at least reasonably credible. Now it's 5 packs for $1 of ramen. And about the average outlay for a person on EBT, or what we used to call food stamps, is about $1 a day. So the most effective use of that food stamp dollar is to eat 5 packs of ramen per day. The only problem being that some recent reporting indicates that ramen may be, what, carcinogenic? Or at the very least, just raise living hell with your gastrointestinal system? You know, your innards? Your gut? But that was way too nuanced for those two folks. And, of course, we can never, ever, ever talk about things like industrial toxins or talk about ultra-fine particulates. See that part of Europe that was all greenish? They take ultra-fines very seriously over there. We can't even get the Environmental Protection Agency here to establish a standard for them. The lowest standard for particulate matter that the Environmental Protection Agency has is for particles that are, oh, God, uh, 25 times or 250 times, I can't recall off the top of my head, the size of an ultrafine. We simply don't. And if anybody mentions the fact that maybe it would be good not to just poison babies in the womb or poison the air that people have to breathe, well, then the godforsaken Republican Party is there to remind us that what we're talking about there is wanting job-killing regulations. And there won't be nobody working jobs in America, and the whole country will just collapse, and the minimum wage is going to do that anyway, and all them useless eaters out there eating their 5 packs of ramen for a dollar a day, boy, America's just falling apart as it is. It's a wonder we ain't all got the Ebola by now. Carol noting in the chat room, you know, it has everything to do with priorities. We don't value people, especially blah people and poor people and old people and sick people. Rich people need that money for a third vacation home. Yeah. Or as Embrant notes, don't forget buying your 16-year-old that first Mercedes. That really is pretty much where we are. But it is not unnoteworthy or without note that, yeah, those countries that were green tinted in Europe, in almost every one, a working person is guaranteed as a matter of law and a matter of right about 6 weeks of paid vacation per year. We can't have that in the capitalist wonderland, of course, because the economy would collapse. You ever notice that anything that would actually materially improve the lives of working people in this country is immediately declared to be a job killer by the Republican Party? There's a line from a song written by Mac McAnally many, many years ago, recorded by Jimmy Buffett, called "It's My Job." Whenever I see stories like this, I'm put in mind of it. Here's the Jimmy Buffett version. I love the tinkling ivories there.
In the middle of late last night, I was sitting on a curb. I didn't know what about, but I was feeling quite disturbed. A street sweeper came whistling by. He was bouncing every step. It seemed strange how good he felt. So I asked him while he swept. He said, it's my job to be cleaning up this mess. And that's enough reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest. And that makes the day for me. I got an uncle who owns a bank. He's a self-made millionaire. He never had anyone to love, never had no one to care. He always seemed kind of sad to me, and I asked him why that was. And he told me it's because in my contract there's this clause that says it's my job to be worried half to death. And that's the thing people respect in me. It's my job, but without it I'd be less than what I expect from me. Now I've been lazy most all my life, writing songs and sleeping late. And any manual labor I've done was purely by mistake. Street sweepers can smile, then I've got no right to feel upset. But sometimes I still forget, till the lights go on and the stage is set and the song hits home and you feel that sweat. It's my job to be different than the rest, and that's enough a reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest. It's my job to be cleaning up this mess, and that's another reason to go for me. It's my job to be better than the rest, and that makes the day for me.
Yeah, the reason I think about that, and you know, what the hell's wrong with a little musical interlude on a Friday on the front porch anyway? The reason it put me in the mind of that is that that's kind of an ideal work situation, isn't it? Where the guy who sweeps the streets feels as much dignity in his work as the guy who owns the bank in his. Well, we can't have none of them government-mandated 6-week vacations in this country, because then productivity would fall off. And productivity is another way of saying getting worked to death. And frankly, having a millionaire declare that, what we're not doing here is we're not stopping to smell the roses. We're working too hard. That's all there is. It's not like there's an alternative. Remember, having 3 jobs in this country is uniquely American. So too, apparently, is dying in your van while you're trying to take a nap between job 1 and job 2 or job 2 and job 3. Because the only thing that matters in this country is jobs. You know, we're being told day in and day out here that if we only elect a bunch of good God-fearing, Bible-believing teabaggers, we're going to have jobs in West Virginia. We're going to have some prosperity. That's what Shelley Moore Capito and Evan Jenkins and that feller named Mooney from Maryland will do. They'll bring us some jobs. They'll whoop ass on the EPA, and they'll put that Obama in his place, and they'll beat back that war on coal. Them little coal making Keebler elves down under the earth will just make some more right quick, and they'll push it up to the top of the mountains, and we blow the mountains away and run the poisons into the stream, and oh wait, then the life expectancy goes down again. Oops. I really have become quite jaded. Well, I guess every political season does it to me, but it feels worse this time through. It really does. I mean, from the It's My Job category, what if there was an extra verse in that song that said, it's my job to create sleazy political ads that'll make people want to stay away from the polls, and that's enough reason to go for me. Because, see, there's a class of... You want to know why the unemployment number dropped to 5.9% this last quarter? Or last month, rather? I think it's entirely a matter of the political sleaze merchants. There's lots of them out on the bricks right now, producing ads with Republicans shooting guns and Republicans going to church and Republicans eating in diners and ads with pictures of their opponents, calling them everything but a human being. And make no mistake, as I've pointed out in the past, this is by design. Because if the Repiglickens, if especially outfits like the Koch brothers and the Teabaggers generally, and that miserable sack of skin Karl Rove, if they can get people so disgusted with the process that people just say, screw it, I'm staying home, well, yeah, the Repiglickens will win. And if past history is any indication, it's pretty easy to keep liberals and progressives to stay home. I mean, what must it be like? Hi, honey, I'm home. Oh. How was your day, sweetheart? Well, today I slandered three political candidates and accused them of things that I know are absolutely untrue. I told a lot of lies today, but they're paying me very well to say them. Oh, that's nice. Hi, Mommy, what did you do today? Well, Mommy lied for you. Maybe someday you can grow up and be a liar, too. For right-wing authoritarian proto-fascists. Or maybe actual fascists. Ew, that's kind of grim. But we do. We work too hard in this country. And we don't have enough gumption to demand better. Because we're scared. Scared it may all disappear. And then again, there are some people who just shouldn't have jobs. One of those people is apparently Lieutenant Sean Williams of the Charleston, West Virginia Police Department. It's always so much fun when we have a nice emblematic story of what's wrong in America, and it just happens to come from Central Appalachia, you know, America's canary in the coal mines. Lieutenant Sean Williams is with the Charleston Police Department. Lieutenant Lieutenant Sean Williams has a daughter. Not a grown daughter, not an adult daughter, but a child daughter. Lieutenant Sean Williams is presently on administrative leave. Charleston Gazette reported this story a couple of days ago. A video has come to light. Oh, yes. In which Sean Williams' daughter can be seen wearing presumably daddy's police officer gear and marching around to, and I didn't know they had one, marching around to the Ku Klux Klan anthem. Apparently the anthem is called Stand Up and Be Counted. It has what is described as a martial beat. And lyrics that say, stand up and be counted, show the world that you're a man, stand up and be counted, go with the Ku Klux Klan. In the video, and I don't have access to it, one can apparently hear Lieutenant Sean Williams in the background asking the little girl questions and using what is described as derogatory racial language. The excuse? It's a somewhat Nixon-esque non-denial denial. Rusty Marks has the story at wvgazette.com. That's where you can find it if you want to go and, you know, share it around or whatever. Apparently there is not just one video, but several. And asked for comment, Lieutenant Williams, Lieutenant, said, my wife and I are in the middle of a difficult and painful divorce. Neither of us can or should disclose or comment on deeply personal matters involving our children, who are my first concern. These matters involve a sealed court proceeding. In other words, damn it, she brought up the Klan videos, and somebody done let them out there, and now I'm stone cold busted. Not one video, several videos. I am not for certain, but it appears the prosecuting attorney of Kanawha County, who himself has no small amount of problems. He also is estranged from the woman with whom he had children. And apparently it is not a pleasant divorce. And apparently the prosecuting attorney likes to use implements, tools, if you will, things, in order to impose discipline upon his children. Here we go again, right? Well, nonetheless, the Kanawha County prosecuting attorney has announced that every single case that has involved Lieutenant Sean Williams that is in his office or has been in his office will be reviewed. Because you know what? If you're willing to make a video of your daughter marching around to the anthem of the Ku Klux Klan, that alone might be enough to convince a reasonable and prudent prosecutor that maybe some of the prosecutions brought by that were brought on complaints signed by said police officer might just be a little itsy bitsy racially motivated if they happen to involve people with degrees of melanin in their skin, which Lieutenant Sean Williams finds to be unacceptably high. According to the press release from the Kanawha County Prosecutor's Office, any time an officer is under investigation for misconduct, the reliability of their testimony is in question. At least Lieutenant Sean Williams didn't shoot a black kid with his hands in the air and leave him murdered in the middle of the street. And that's about the best thing you can say out of this case. Hey, these things are part of a sealed proceeding. Why are we talking about this? I do love the fact that he notes his children are his first concern. And apparently, if all of this is to be believed, he was so concerned about his daughter that he dressed her up in daddy's police gear and had her march around and sing about the Klan. I mean, who knew there was an anthem? Ain't gonna play it. Can't make me. Meanwhile, Isaac sent me a link, and it is to a WBAL news report . Isaac says you have to watch the clip. Well, I'll watch. Let's all listen together. Maybe. Working. Any second now. Here we go.
Was treated like a criminal.
Meet Venus Green, 90 years old, a retired educator, and as of today, a little better off, courtesy of the city's decision to settle the lawsuit she had filed against city police.
You know how much they gave me?
$95,000.
That is not enough.
In July 2009, Venus's grandson, Tally, was shot and wounded. He says it happened at a convenience store. Police insisted it happened inside Venus's house. And Venus says that the shooter was one of the two of them.
Police kept questioning him. They won't let the ambulance attendant treat him. So I got up. I said, sir, would you please let the attendants treat him? I said, she's in pain. Oh, you did it. And just come on, let's go inside. I'll prove where that blood is. You did it.
Police wanted to go to the basement where Tally lived. Venus said no, not without a warrant.
So they want to go down. I said, no, you don't have a warrant. You don't go down in my house like that. He wasn't shot in here. I'm going to find that gun. I'm going to prove that you did it.
A struggle ensued between a male officer and Venus, at the time aged 87.
He dragged me in there, threw me across the chair, put handcuffs on me, and just started calling me B-name. Black at that, too. And just ridiculed me.
An officer went to the basement. Venus responded.
Then she locked the door, the basement door. So she basically took matters into her own hands.
Whether I latch it or not, but this is my private home. And if I latch it, that was my prerogative. Because he had no search warrant to go in my basement, so I had a right to latch it.
Venus suffered a separated shoulder in the scuffle and sued the department for assault and violations of her rights. The city chose to settle the case and not take a chance in front of a jury.
We thought we would have a difficult time in front of a city jury. Or any jury.
No doubt.
I was once a block watcher, department head of a high school. Been around in education for over 50 years. Abiding citizen, has never been arrested. Paid my taxes, owned my home. Husband died 34 years ago, raised my son. And I've been brutally abused. I feel like the police department need to go back to school.
In the past two fiscal years, the city has paid out $16.8 million in claims against the police department. City Council President Jack Young voted against this settlement and others, saying, quote, he's tired of the police department bleeding money. I'm Jane Miller, WBAL, TV 11 News.
What exactly does that mean, that he's tired of the police department bleeding money? I didn't notice there was a statement from him saying he was tired of citizens of the city of Baltimore bleeding blood. This is a happy story. You know, I get notes from time to time saying, hey, Bob, let's have some happy news. Well, here's your happy news, and thank you, Isaac. It should be happier. A separated shoulder's only worth 95 grand. Beating on an 87-year-old woman is only worth 95 grand. You know, that councilman may be tired of the police force bleeding money, but you know what? How about teaching the police force not to behave like thugs to 87-year-old women? Then they won't bleed money anymore. Because if you're a properly trained police officer, you know what the answer to, do you have a warrant and you say no, and she says then you can't go in the basement, you know what your answer is? All right, cool, I'll go get a warrant. But it is more convenient, is it not, in the short run? It is more perhaps satisfying in the short run to rough up the 87-year-old lady and give her a good intimidating. Yeah. Email coming in from right there in that very city, our good friend Harry in Baltimore. Harry says, as you probably know, the 5.9% unemployment rate for September 2014 is based on the U3 number from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But this U3 formula only includes employed full-time workers and counts as unemployed only those who have been looking for work within the past 4 weeks or 1 month. Oh! The U6 calculation, on the other hand, includes as unemployed people who have given up after looking for a job sometime within the last 12 months rather than just within the last month, the unattached workforce. Called people who have become completely discouraged about looking for a job, and people who have part-time jobs who really want or need a full-time job. And here's the fun part. The U6 rate for September is 11.8%. Ironically, it is twice the U3 rate this month, but not always. One interesting note is that the U6 rate for September, 11.8%, is less than 12% for the first time since October 2008. Moreover, to take a different perspective on unemployment numbers, if one looks at the labor force participation as measured regularly by the economists at the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank and published at the St. Louis Fed website, the September 2014 labor force participation rate, seasonally adjusted, was 62.7%. This implies an unemployment rate of 37.3% among the entire work-eligible population. Harry says, well, that's about as far as my insights into unemployment numbers go for today. But I looked into this for an hour or so because I'm not at all convinced by the 5.9% U3 unemployment rate. It strikes me as one of the least reliable indicators that we have. This is troubling news indeed. And warmest regards to the Horn family, signed Harry. But, of course, if you're part of the for-profit media, it's easy to just report, well, unemployment numbers dropped to 5.9%. Ooh. I mean, that's the alert I got in my email earlier today from the New York Times. Unemployment drops to 5.9%. Woohoo! But if you're like me, or I don't know if she's listening or not, because she was the one of the first ones to raise it, if you're like Sandra, a 37.3% unemployment rate is the stuff of which revolutions, coups, atonal music, you know, are made of. And if my previous reading on the topic is any indication, people at that 12-month mark aren't going to reemploy, or a significant percentage of them aren't going to reemploy. And by the way, I seem to remember something from the dim and distant past. One of the ways, if I recall correctly, one of the ways that, and this started in the Reagan administration, one of the ways that that greasy-headed old B-movie actor and his gang of as yet at the time unindicted co-conspirators dummied up the employment numbers and made it look like he was doing something halfway decent for the country, which then inspired people who had been voting Democrat for years to turn around and say, "Well, I'm a Reagan Democrat." Was to include the military as employed persons. If I recall correctly, and my recollection may be flawed, but if I recall correctly, prior to Ronnie Reagan, the military had not been included in the employment numbers. So if suddenly you include them, you can see a downward departure in the unemployment numbers. And you never even did anything. But, yeah. Waggy pointing out in the chat room, those are Depression-era unemployment levels. It's chilling. I remember many years ago now when Reverbo was writing, I think it was a four-part series. Three or four, about his attempts to find work in the glorious capitalist miracle that is the American labor market. It involved trips aboard the dirigible, the Silver Pelican, along with a passenger by the name of Ross Perot. It was great writing and a delightful read. Hopefully we'll restore it at some point in time. But if you look, oh, and by the way, I want to back up for just a minute. That miracle of the internet that was by which I was watching a certain news program this morning. Also featured an interview with the director of the Centers for Disease Control and a certain former Republican congressman, for all intents and purposes, pulled a Rand Paul, demanding that the director of the Centers for Disease Control admit that the CDC isn't really telling us everything we need to know about the transmissibility of the Ebola virus. Never saying so directly, but hintimating, oh, there's a good neologism, but hintimating that Ebola really, you can probably get it from a toilet seat. I don't know why you would want to terrify people unless, I don't know, does it sell product? But there was a kind of brooga aspect to the questioning. Really? Really? Doctor, why don't you just go ahead and admit on national television that this has gone airborne? You can just catch it walking down the street now, and the next thing you know, you're all Ebola'd up. What, honest to God, what is the, what's the percentage? Where's the joy in terrifying people? Because I get the sense that this country is probably pretty easily spooked. 37% unemployment? I mean, that's the kind of unemployment numbers that, well, we don't really need to go there, but. And what kind of a dodgy number is it where you only count people who've been unemployed for 4 weeks as being unemployed? What's that U6, the deadbeat index? No, that's just the wrong one. That's the hammock index. They've been unemployed for more than a year, and, well, they've strung their hammock up out there, and they're just swinging back and forth in the hammock and eating that government cheese and having a high old life. They're probably, if they're in a hammock, it's probably because they don't have a house. Right? And I saw a, you probably learned overnight that an independent contractor, cameraman for NBC News, has been diagnosed and is being shipped home along with the NBC medical staff. Reuters reporting today that Howard University Hospital in Washington, D.C., has admitted a patient with possible symptoms of Ebola. They did so out of what they describe in a press release as an abundance of caution. Good. I'm all for an abundance of caution. That abundance of caution was not on display in Texas when the individual there went to the emergency room and was turned loose and sent home. Here's a question. Now, the man had flown over here from Liberia. He goes to the emergency room manifesting symptoms of Ebola. But what is Texas? Texas is the state in the union with the single highest number of uninsured persons in the entire country. So what happens, you remember when Bishop Willard Romney said you get taken care of if you're uninsured and you go to the emergency room? Doesn't work like that. There are, in every emergency room with which I've ever been familiar, there are signs posted all over the place saying, we can't refuse to treat you if you don't have insurance or you don't have money. Under law, we are required to stabilize you. That doesn't mean cure you. That doesn't mean fix your heart attack. That doesn't mean diagnose your cancer and then get you started on chemo right away. Stabilize you. And there's a big difference in treat to stabilize as opposed to treat to cure. And so unless there is evidence to the contrary, this guy showed up at the Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, uninsured, and they took his temperature, and he said he was achy, and they said, Dad, take 2 aspirin and don't call us in the morning. Only because this guy was persistent and went back did he finally get diagnosed. Now, meanwhile, he's being vilified in the for-profit media as a liar. because he said he hadn't been in contact with anybody who was sick. Well, they haven't quite gotten around in Liberia yet. They haven't quite gotten around to tattooing Ebola across the heads of people who have the disease. Meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., the patient who had recently traveled to Nigeria is in stable condition and is being treated in isolation, and that's about all the details that are coming out. But certain members, certain right-wing members of the babbling class, as well as certain governors, would like you to be afraid. Be very afraid. Don't be a little bit afraid. Don't be cautious. Be terrified. Run down the streets naked going, if you feel the need. Because that one is going to get this whole country. Wait, what did Lindsey Graham say? It's going to get us all killed. Yes. Going back to the police stories, Tim from L.A. notes, Bob, a black person is a thug, you know, like Trayvon Martin, but a cop beating the shit out of an 87-year-old woman is an aberration and at most someone who used excessive force. Meanwhile, according to Merriam-Webster, Tim points out, thug, noun, thug. Definition, a violent criminal. Tim says, sounds like the description of the cop who tortured poor Venus Green. Finally, $95,000 settlement money. I hope it isn't a structure. I hope it isn't a structured settlement. Lots of working room out there this evening. And a reminder, here at about 3 minutes before the hour, will be, I presume that Sparky already has the bat signal out for the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. If you would like to be part of it, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. And you, too, can be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable discussion that is every Friday on the front porch here at the Horn. Pray the Ebola away! Yeah, you know it. Thank you, Tim. More details are coming out about the origins of the Ebola virus. Of course, even saying, because it was first identified in what, the early 1970s? But the problem is that if you talk about the origin of a virus, that's going to run completely at odds with the young earth creationism, because everything that is here now was there then, right? So the Ebola virus had to be here, just waiting for some sinner. Meanwhile, scientists have declared in an article from The Guardian that the HIV problem, pandemic, originated in the 1920s in Kinshasa. The 1920s. That means about, 60 years before it began affecting white people and we began taking notice of it. At The Guardian, Ian Sample writes, though the virus probably crossed from chimpanzees to humans in southern Cameroon years earlier, HIV remained a regional infection until it entered the capital of what is now the Democratic Republic of the Congo. From the 1920s until 1960, the pandemic HIV strain, there were others that fizzled out, wait a minute, that would be evolution, spread from Kinshasa, crossed borders to other nations, and ultimately landed on distant continents. It has infected nearly 75 million people worldwide to date. When the virus first arrived, Kinshasa was bustling. It was the largest and fastest growing city in the region, with transport links reaching up and down the country. The busy Congo River curved north and east to Kisangani, more than 600 miles away. The railway carried scores of workers southeast to Katanga, a mining province reliant on, oh look, a mining province in a colony. Who'd have thunk? Relying on immigrant labor and on to Lubumbashi, more than 900 miles away. By the 1940s, according to records, more than a million people a year passed through Kinshasa on the railways alone. By 1960, the rate of new pandemic HIV infections outpaced the growth of the regional population, according to research recently published in the magazine Science. This is all due to research work done at the universities of Leuven and Oxford. And they've now created a family tree of the HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, that allows them to look back to the origins of the pandemic in 1920s Kinshasa. Another disease which the American right wing tried to turn into a hysteria. I guess you could say, and maybe I'm wrong, but you could say that HIV and Ebola share one thing in common. They both, neither of them have become airborne, and they both require contact with bodily fluids in order to contract the disease. It sounds like the vector for Ebola is slightly less attenuated, but there does seem to be a similarity. Okay, Sparky informing me that the bat signal is in fact lit. We'll take a break. With a reminder, by the way, this being Friday, and I don't know quite how to do this because it's in the middle of the program, but I'll have to watch it in reruns. Beginning Monday on MSNBC on All In with Chris Hayes, the week-long series, Coal. There will be a segment of the series airing each night that week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I am now told that the Mountaintop Removal segment will air on Tuesday. And I hope people learn. It'll be amazing, but people will actually learn about mountaintop removal for the first time. And, of course, it's so upmost in my mind, I can't imagine what it's like not to know what it is. But then again, this is the most abusable, most forgettable region in the entire United States. And I have every confidence that they will do a magnificent job with this series. So just a reminder. Because I want a lot of people to learn about mountaintop removal. I want a lot of people to learn about how deeply coal is still involved in their lives. And learn about the fact that it may be poisoning them or someone they care about, someone they love. even as they sit there watching it. So by all means, use the massive tools of social media, if you are a social media person, to spread the word about this upcoming week-long series. You never know. You may save a life. You never know. You may participate in building enough momentum to actually get the government to do something about this. And wouldn't that be nice? So we will fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for this Friday on the front porch. If you've got a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle, if there's a bee under the saddle, the horse is not going to appreciate that in the least. But whatever it is, if you've got something that's motivating you, by all means, jump into the conversation by sending a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. Oh, and a technical update. We are expecting the phone gizmo here in the earliest part of next week. So we may even be trying the system out before next week is out. And won't that be exciting? And I want to thank everybody who made that possible. Everyone who responded to our buddy Tom's challenge, everyone who responded to Gary Laborman's challenge. Thank you, one and all, because you've made it possible for people who have not been able to participate fully in the program to be able to participate again. And, isn't that what this is all about? Isn't it about community? Isn't it about building a group who operate first and foremost by goodwill? Sometimes I just sit back and look at what you guys have accomplished, and it's absolutely stunning to me. Amazing. Y'all have kept a little Hillbilly Radio Network on the air for near 10 years. That is astounding. So, break time. Jump on into the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and we'll get this thing rolling. This is Conversation Radio. By the way, until the PayPal button comes back to life, if you want to help keep this going, simply go to PayPal, log into your PayPal account, and use this email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Don't use Bob or Bob Kincaid at anywhere else. BobKincaid@gmail.com. And, we've got $160 to go to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And as much as anything, that's the reason we're still there is more to be attributed to the absence of the button than the absence of participation. So PayPal, bobkincaid@gmail.com, click sending money to friends or family, and you won't have to, and the transfer fees will be waived. It's all right there. It's about 9 minutes past the hour. Jump on in. Let's make the next hour and 50 minutes of Friday on the Front Porch a real rousing one. I seem to recall somebody in the chat room posting last night, we are going to have a hoot on this Friday on the front porch. Well, let's make it so, number one. Right? Yeah. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Work song, REM. This is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch, and let us not shilly-shally about at all. Rather, let us get right to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation that takes place here every Friday, going over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Plenty of room for you, too, if you want in. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. You had us worried there for a little bit the music wouldn't play.
Huh?
The music was breaking up the feed for the music.
Oh, you know what? I think Skype can't handle the music.
Well, anyway, it's all good now.
Now, the music wasn't breaking up on the regular stream, was it?
I wasn't listening to the regular stream.
Okay, yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, I think that's just a limitation with Skype. We're all here and more folks I'm sure will be wandering by. Good evening, Sparky. Good evening. Carol?
Howdy, howdy.
And somebody's feeding back to me. And good evening, Anatole. And good evening.
Good evening.
Oh.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Waggy. Are you there, Anatole?
Yes, I'm here. I'm muting my mic.
Ah, okay. Okay. Just wanted to check in. So somebody get us started.
Okay.
You want to jump in, Carol? I get a phone call.
Yeah, go, Carol.
The hazmat team. Somebody's not here, dude. The hazmat team is finally...
Oh, hang on. Hey, Sal. Sal, you
got to mute.
Got to mute, Sal.
What?
Okay, just...
Oh, that takes care of that.
Okay.
That's better. Okay, the hazmat team's finally been dispatched to that apartment in Dallas where that guy was taken.
Yes.
Taken from, rather. And, I mean, can you imagine having a cop sit outside your house to force you to stay in a place where they're suspecting that there's live Ebola virus in the house and they won't let you out? And somebody finally thought to bring him food.
Yeah, right, right. But, see, I watched that unfold, Carol, with more than a little bit of stunned amazement. Because they left the people in there with the guy's soiled linens and his dirty clothes and the people inside the apartment were kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
Because they felt like they'd sort of been left there to get the Ebola.
Well, you know, they're okay. And I know I'm going to get accused of playing the race card, but do you honestly believe if these were affluent white people, they would have been left in their home?
Not for a minute.
But these were poor black people.
But I also think if this was an epidemic happening in an affluent white nation, it wouldn't be happening.
Well, that's true.
But, I mean, see, you went there. I went somewhere else, Carol.
Oh, I think it has to do with race and class.
Well, I think it has to do with Texas.
Well, you know, they do like to be the first.
I mean, it's not the Lone Star Republic, it's the Bootstrap Republic.
Yes.
And we're all going to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, and maybe I'm being hard on Texas. And if I am, I apologize, because I got a lot of friends there, and there's a lot to love about the place. There's a lot to adore about the place.
I don't know. I haven't found anything yet.
I'm here in Texas right now, so go on.
Okay. Well, I mean, if I'm getting anything wrong, Waggy, I mean, jump in.
I'm listening.
But you can't ignore the fact that that state has a monumental uninsured population, and you can't ignore the fact that it is a deeply stratified culture. If this was wealthy people, regardless of race, let's make the little lurking wingnuts happy, and let's say we're gonna factor race right out of this.
Right, because there's so many black millionaires.
Yeah. What about Herman Cain? I'm sorry, Herb. What about Herb Cain?
Herb is a neighborhood.
but let's say it was just wealthy people versus people of modest means.
Okay.
Would wealthy people be left there, or would the people with the moon suits have been there quicker than you can say Ghostbusters?
Oh, hell yeah.
And secondly, if they had to be isolated, don't you think they would be isolated in a
medical center
facility? Right.
Where they had access to, like, prophylactic drugs and they were comfortable and being fed and cared for
and monitored. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one of these. And maybe we don't get the answer to this question because no one has any way of finding out. But I, by God, want to know. And I've read a number of articles and I haven't seen anything about it. If somebody's got it, send it to me and I'll say, oh, I missed that one. I want to know what the insurance status was of the guy who's got it. One. I want to know what the insurance, and I don't have to have people's names.
The Liberian guy?
Yeah. I want to know what his insurance status was.
He didn't have insurance.
Okay, how about the people he was living with?
I guarantee you they don't have insurance.
Guess why they're not in a facility being medically monitored.
In order for him to come to the country, somebody had to sign a document saying that his health care would be taken care of here.
He probably signed it. He signed a document.
No, you have to be sponsored.
Even
coming in, if you're coming in on a visa to this country.
Even to visit?
Oh, especially to visit, yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Have you tried to get anyone to the country recently?
Well, you know,
or talked with anyone who's applied for a visa here?
No.
Yeah, it's insanely complicated, especially if you're coming from a poor country. And even Europeans are complaining about not being able to get tourist visas here. But if you're coming from a poor country, you've got to demonstrate to the U.S. government that you will that you have the means yourself, or that you'll be sponsored by someone here who can take care of all of your needs, including health care. And you've got to provide evidence of that.
Well, talk about give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
Oh, this is just for a tourist visa, yeah. And then you've got to also demonstrate that you have a compelling reason to return to your country of origin.
Well, he also signed a document saying he had not been in contact with anyone who had Ebola, and he lied about that.
Well, what do you mean? He may not have known. People can be, if somebody sneezes, how do you know they got Ebola?
He was in a taxi cab with a pregnant woman who died of Ebola.
In the cab while he was there?
He carried her into the cab and took her to the hospital.
Yeah, but Carol, she was also 7 months pregnant. And they thought she was having a miscarriage, or that's the way it's being portrayed. I'm not trying to bleeding heart this thing, but let's say I actively knew I had it.
Would you rather be treated for it in Liberia or the United States?
Bingo. I will lie my ass off. I will go to the hospital through the hospital to prison pipeline.
I would tell anybody anything to get here.
I think that factors in, but I don't think everybody in that apartment was some sort of Liberian emigre, were they?
No. From what I understand, they're American citizens.
His family, so yeah, very likely immigrants or second generation.
So what do you see where I'm going here?
Yeah, but I'm also very disturbed that so many of the progressive people that I've been talking to throughout the day today are like in full-blown Fox News panic mode. The whole apartment complex should be quarantined. All international travel should be suspended. People coming into this country should be quarantined, just like Ellis Island. I'm serious. I've had these conversations today because I'm going, but do you know how seriously in direct contact you have to be with somebody to get it? And I mean, they're just in total freak out mode.
But remember those children that Andrea Tantaro said he exposed him to?
Yeah.
Well,
exposed. Nobody ever explained that.
No, they did. Well, no, I mean, they just put that out there for Clyde and Arlie and Emery and Clyde and Arlie and Cletus. Emery and Marvelly and Cletus
Marvelly.
And Dreama and, well, they're kind of quarantined too. Those children can't leave the apartment now or wherever it is they live. And they're not part of the same people who were in the apartment that were left to starve until the food bank figured out that there was a problem. Wow, huh?
So how long are they going to keep him in the apartment?
21 days.
Yeah. And, I mean, can we also ask the question, what happens if one of them becomes symptomatic?
Mm-hmm. Oh, then they're taken away in quarantine.
Well, then why don't you take them away
in a hospital? because that's extremely expensive.
Yeah, if you
and quarantine units are full of people with tuberculosis and stuff. It's not like we've got, you know, loads of quarantine units that are sitting empty and just waiting for people to fill them.
Is tuberculosis a big deal in Texas, Waggy?
Oh yes, especially in hospitals. Tuberculosis is a much bigger problem in the U.S. than most of the other.
And then there's MRSA.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. You're going to leave the hospital with at least that as well.
I'm more scared of West Nile than Ebola.
But let's say this person does become symptomatic, and they are hospitalized, and they are in uninsured. And I'm not trying to sound like somebody who's just counting money here. But in a loving and forgiving and merciful state like Texas, what happens to those people? If they survive Ebola, do they then get a bill?
Oh hell yeah, they get a bill.
I would think bankruptcy would be pretty close to the horizon because you've lost your job by then for sure. These folks have been quarantined, and I don't think they're keeping their jobs either.
I'd imagine not.
Yeah, hey, boss, I can't come in this morning. I'm quarantined for Ebola. Yeah, don't come back at all, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, but we've had people die of West Nile out here just because it's only transmitted by mosquitoes.
Yeah. And for that, that vectors a hell of a lot more easily, right?
Yeah, I mean, anytime it rains and there's standing water around, the heat comes out, mosquitoes come out again.
I mean, but the CDC's made it pretty clear that Ebola doesn't survive very long on its own. And a weak bleach solution is all it takes, you know, like a 10% bleach solution is all it takes to kill it.
Yeah, well, and that goes back to why this has become an epidemic, where it has become an epidemic. See, the so-called developed world, what used to be called the first world, has done a magnificent job of ignoring virtually every country on the continent of Africa unless there are extractable natural resources in that country, and then they go in and they exploit it for all they're worth. And get out as fast as they can.
And we still ignore the people even there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows that I'm a Tony Bourdain fan.
Mm-hmm.
The segment, the episode that he did on his trip to the Congo, you know, the former Belgian colony.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Heart of Darkness. I've read periodically about the genocidal tendencies of King Leopold of Belgium, but that really brought it home. And for anybody who has, I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, I do highly recommend the Congo episode. Well, I recommend all of his work, whatever network he's with. This was one of his CNN episodes, but you really get a sense for the degree to which colonized countries on the African continent were pillaged and abandoned. I mean, let's remember, everything that we're talking about here is arising in Liberia. There's a reason that country has that name. Liberia, Liberia was created by the United States of America, for all intents and purposes, as the place to which we hoped to repatriate all the former slaves once slavery was abolished. I mean, Abraham Lincoln was a big believer in Liberia. The capital of Liberia is Monrovia, and it's named after James Monroe. And we didn't want it to be a colony. We wanted to wash our hands and walk away. But it took Frederick Douglass going to Abraham Lincoln and saying, "Mr. President, I'm not going to Africa. I'm not Africa. I'm not African. I'm an American. I was born here. My parents were born here. I'm going to stay here. I want to be free here."
Not to mention, most of those slaves didn't come from Liberia, so they were going to get kidnapped from their country, used for generations, and then their ancestors were going to go get dumped in a nation from which they did not originate.
Right. And in which they had completely lost all ties in many instances, because it was beaten out of them, their tribal ancestry. You know, the reason this has become an epidemic in the countries of the western part of the continent is because of lack of infrastructure, because of lack of teaching, because of lack of education, because of lack of modern understanding of disease processes. And any or all of these things could have been remedied for relative pennies by just about any developed nation on earth that saw fit to do it. So I have a hard time viewing this through any other lens save that of colonialism. This is another curse of colonialism.
So now that we get to go in there and try to attempt to clean it up by sending 3,000 soldiers, and all the right wing is saying, like the Savage Wiener, they're going to bring back the Ebola to kill us all.
Right, because, you know, they're our hero warriors as long as they're killing the right people. But if we send
those
them
aren't,
in...
Those aren't random soldiers they're sending. They said which... bases or forts that they're coming from, and they're both medical forts that are known for large medical contingents. It's pretty safe to assume that they're sending lots and lots of medical and basically civil engineering construction types to build the facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what, Waggy? What Sparky was saying about, you know, the Savage Wiener and these other right wingers, when it is convenient for the right wingers, they assume that our troops are dumber than a handful of hair.
One of the most well-trained groups of people in the whole freaking world.
Yeah.
Our military. We don't spend, it's got to be 20 grand per person for each enlisted folks to train them just to throw money down a toilet. Military training and education is really, really effective.
Yeah, back when I was reading the Rolling Stone account called The Killer Elite about that, what was it, Bravo Company out of the first Marine Recons. Those are fairly elite Marines. It costs about $1 million to train one member of one of those companies.
Yep.
And so, you know, you would think that you don't just casually put them at risk. But on the one hand, you've got the right wing out there who want to throw the full might of the American military into a fight with a bunch of people running around in Toyota pickup trucks with 55 caliber machine guns mounted on the back.
That's something I actually brought up in the chat the other night. It's like I brought it up to Devin, how, you know, and you know, it was Devin and a couple others that I forget. And I was looking at pictures of ISIS on the internet, or ISIL or whatever it's called now. And it's like, it's funny. I always see them in Toyotas for some reason.
Oh, the Chad Libya war that raged in Africa. For I forget how long, was waged almost entirely from the backs of Toyota pickup trucks. They're really, really tough. They're resilient, and you can mount a machine gun on them and really raise a ruckus.
They're called technicals.
Yeah.
That word got started in Somalia, if you remember. Just get a pickup, mount a machine gun on it. That's a technical.
Kind of sounds like a deer hunting strategy here in West Virginia. Believe me, if we could do that, we would mount machine guns in pickup trucks and go deer hunting.
They use four wheelers, right? And those big.
I mean they use those, but your dedicated hardcore poaching road hunter uses a 30-30 carbine, you know, fairly short, sometimes with a baby bottle nipple on the muzzle, as a muzzle brake, and you know they just drive down country roads, and there'll be 15 or 20 deer eating out in the field, and they'll just shoot them and watch them die. But, go ahead, Sergi.
Oh, I was just about to say good evening, everyone. I didn't properly introduce myself.
Hey, Sergi.
So,
what's your report from Texas on the Ebola? What are you hearing on the
street? Yeah, you're in Dallas-Fort Worth, Sergi. I mean...
Oh, man, it's been crazy. Channel 8 and Channel 11, because those are the only news stations I can really watch here, or Channel 8 and Channel 11. They both, you know, when you watch their newscasts, it's almost wall-to-wall Ebola, 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 Ebola. And it's more scaremongering than anything else, because, I mean, the dude's quarantined. Yes, there were people... he had contact with, but Ebola is not like the common cold. It can't spread through the air. In order to get Ebola from someone, you have to have contact with their sweat or their urine or whatever, you know, some kind of bodily substance. And most people who converse with whoever, you know, don't have contact. I'm not concerned about some Ebola pandemic spreading from Dallas out. You know, it's one dude. He's in isolation. His family's in isolation. In fact, his family tried to break the quarantine, and now they have a police barrier around the apartment complex to keep him from leaving. So I'm not concerned about some big, you know.
Do you think they'd, and I go back to Carol's question, do you think they'd put a police guard outside, say, a McMansion if they had people quarantined in there?
Well, it's Dallas County, so yes, they would. Dallas County doesn't care if you're rich or poor or da-da-da or da-da-da. If you have a contagious disease, well, not contagious, but a semi-contagious disease that can, you know, that can cause a pandemic, they will isolate your ass. It's not like Dallas County's pretty sane, you know. They're all progressives over there in Dallas County. It's almost a completely progressive-controlled county. And, you know, I mean, they actually have fair courts, believe it or not. They're one of the few counties in Texas to where it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, you're going to get treated fairly in their county courtrooms. So,
Sergi, did you see the front page of today's Fort Worth Star-Telegram?
No, I don't read the Star-Telegram.
It's the big headline was Ebola count hits 100. And then you go,
oh, come on. Really?
I'm serious.
This is what I'm talking about.
I know.
Is this why you don't read it, Sergi?
It's a right-wing newspaper, right?
Well, no. Star-Telegram is actually left-leaning, believe it or not. It's the Dallas Morning News that's right-leaning here in North Texas. The Star-Telegram's left-leaning. But the Star-Telegram is also sensationalist. They're like the Huffington Post, you know. It's like anything that'll sell papers and drive more traffic to their website, they will da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm not surprised that they said count, as if 100 people in the United States and North Texas has Ebola. No, it's 100 people that had contact with the dude.
Mm-hmm. But you got people jerking kids out of school and demanding that everybody who lives in that apartment complex be quarantined, and wants all international air travel to everywhere shut down completely.
And oh, it's that. It's also a lot of people with very interesting senses of humor. There's this meme that's been going around North Texas social networks and such. Y'all know that huge big tech stack.
Oh, hope we didn't lose. You still there, Sergi?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all know that big statue that stands over the state fair here? You know?
Yeah, the big cowboy.
Yeah, the big cowboy. There's a meme going around of him with a whatchamacallit, a mask on his face, one of those hospital masks. It says "Welcome to Dallas" on it.
Who was it that said you will never go broke underestimating the American people? See, I figure in another week's time, because it's all, and on the one hand, it's nothing to joke about. But I, like I said, here in you know, West by Cole, Virginia, I'm already hearing somebody will sneeze and somebody will say, "You got the Ebola," and they'll both chuckle.
Well, we're resorting to dark humor over on my social network too.
So it's but what I'm getting at, no, I understand, Carol, but what I'm getting at is that it's already pretty well fixed in the public consciousness. And so this morning, to see that former congressman asking the director of the CDC to fess up and tell America that it really is that they really don't know how it's spread and it could be a lot more contagious than people have been told that it is. I mean, I've said before, and I think it might be worth remembering now, that this country has not seen within living memory or much living memory a full on no kidding freak out panic
since 1918.
That, or you know, maybe the you know people who lived through the Dust Bowl. Mass migrations, that kind of stuff, and I'm just sitting here saying, I don't think we're gonna handle any such thing particularly well. I mean, compare this with
Katrina depopulated a pretty significant chunk of the country with, and was absorbed throughout neighboring areas over the years. You know.
Yeah, and a lot of people still feel quite displaced out of it, but they can't go back.
I actually read an article about Katrina's political effects. Katrina's a large reason why Louisiana's gotten redder and Texas has gotten bluer, because a lot of the people from New Orleans fled to Texas and never returned.
Let's remember. George W. Bush's mama, the love child of the Quaker Oats man. Let's remember when Katrina was happening, she said, "Well, you know, we've got all these happy people living on cots here in the Astrodome, and everything's just going so well. Our only fear is that they're going to want to stay because Texas is wonderful."
Fear? You know, San Antonio was encouraging folks to permanently resettle here, and a lot did for quite a long time. I was hearing French Creole on the bus. Still do from time to time.
That'd be kind of nice, but no, Babs was not at all.
Oh, and just down the road was a really nice restaurant opened up by one of the displaced people. I think she moved it to even a better location.
Babs Bush was not at all pleased. But my larger point is that we in the 50s we had a freak out over commies. And we didn't handle that well.
I've got a list of how many people was it that did the State Department?
Oh, the speech that he made in Wheeling, West Virginia. It was either 70 or 700 or something like that.
What are you talking about now?
Oh, the McCarthy.
Oh.
And Tim just sent this one in. Coming, it's from Yahoo News. Headline, article by Lisa Maria Garza. Headline, Dallas Ebola patient vomited outside apartment on way to hospital.
Yep, threw up on the sidewalk and folks washed it down. Boy, that's news.
Yeah.
I was going to say, did somebody lick it up or?
Sunlight is a great disinfectant.
Stop sign, Carol, I'm eating.
Not anymore, you're not.
You should be glad you weren't in the horn chat earlier, Sergi.
Well, I couldn't be. My internet is out at home. Oh, that's another.
It took out your internet too.
Well, no, we had a major squall line come through. It wasn't quite a derecho. It actually turned into a derecho when it hit Louisiana, but we had a major storm. And you know, they fired up out of nowhere. And of course, I knew where they were going to happen. It was just a matter of time. But just seeing it on the radar just blow up into these supercells. At my house, I measured hurricane force winds on my anemometer, which almost broke off and blew away.
Oh, no kidding.
And one of the neighbors had this 50-year-old hackberry tree that stood by his driveway next to his truck. It's not there anymore, and his truck was almost totaled.
Oh, yeah. 50 years is about it for hackberry.
And so that thing, all it took was a 70-mile, well, all it took, I mean, but, if, you know, a 70-mile-an-hour wind came through the neighborhood and took down that tree, took down a bunch of other trees, took out some power lines, which is why my aunt still doesn't have power. Fortunately, the power outage was only about an hour and a half at my house. Had 1-inch hail, torrential rains. It was also trash day, pickup day. So,
oh God.
You know, so all the trash and...
I hate myself sometimes for the way my brain works. Go ahead.
I saw all these trash. It was like a, you know, a zombie apocalypse with trash bags. They were all just creeping down the street.
No, I was just thinking, how many berries would a hackberry hack if a hackberry could hack berries?
A little bit of trivia. Hackberries are like choke cherries for people in other parts of the country. And if you get a really nice combination of a frost and then a thaw in the spring when they have berries on them, the berries will ferment on the tree and the birds will eat them and get drunk and fall on the ground.
Yes.
There was actually an anecdote from Birds and Blooms magazine, which is a magazine I read. Its name indicates it all. It's a birding and gardening magazine. And there was a woman one morning in Minnesota who woke up and she looked out on her front lawn and saw hundreds of dead birds, right? So she phoned up her local animal control. But by the time animal control got there, the birds were starting to stir and get up and start flying away, right? And, you know, she and the animal control dude were freaked out. It's like, what's happening, right? And it was in the next 15 minutes, all the birds woke up and flew away as if butter ain't even melted, right? And they investigated and discovered that they had been eating fermented berries off of her trees and bushes. And they basically passed out from being drunk off the berries. And once they slept it off, they flew away.
That's funny. I have never heard that before.
Oh, I've seen birds get drunk on berries before. It's funny.
Hey, next year there were a bunch of crosses between bluebirds and robins flying around.
Hey, I don't want to harsh anybody's mellow or anything, but I'm sitting here having a journalism conniption over this article that Tim sent.
Which
one?
The
Lord.
Dallas Ebola patient vomited outside apartment on way to hospital. That's the headline. Now I'm going to sit here, and it's a Reuters article, and you expect them to be, you know, kind of a little bit responsible. And, of course, I'm sure they didn't write the headline. Somebody at Yahoo wrote the headline.
Well.
Here is the text of the article, and let's just go with just the first three or four or five paragraphs. They're short.
Do I need my hockey puck?
Well, no. This is more of a matter of what ain't there as opposed to what is.
All right.
Four people close to the first person diagnosed with Ebola in the United States were quarantined in a Dallas apartment where sheets and other items used by the man were sealed in plastic bags as health officials widened their search for people who had direct or indirect contact with him. Sentence one. Health officials said on Thursday that 12 to 18 people had direct contact with Thomas Eric Duncan, who flew to Texas from Liberia via Brussels and Washington 2 weeks ago, and they in turn had contact with scores of others. That's paragraph two. Up to 100 people have been contacted, and a handful were being monitored, said Dr. Thomas Frieden, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, period. None of those thought to have had contact with the patient were showing symptoms of Ebola, Dallas County officials said at a news conference. Duncan had been staying in an apartment in the northeastern part of the city for about a week before going to a Dallas hospital. That's paragraph four. The sheets were placed in a sealed plastic bag and have been in the bag as well as the belongings of Mr. Duncan. Those were also in a bag, said Clay Jenkins, Dallas County's top political official. In Liberia, the head of the country's airport authority, Binya Kaseli, said the government could prosecute Duncan for denying he had contact with someone who was eventually diagnosed with Ebola. The government said Duncan failed to declare that he helped neighbor Martha Lean Williams after she fell critically ill on September 15th. Williams died. Anybody want to tell me what ain't in any of those sentences?
Meaning?
No. Not a damn word about anybody vomiting on the sidewalk or outside an apartment.
Ooh. Yeah, a little bit of an oversight there.
All I know is his last name is freaking me out.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that too. But the other thing, I think there's, you know, if you're dealing with something that might tend to freak people out, you know, especially people with, you know, little soft lizard brains that might be walking around thinking about, you know, wondering if Jesus is going to appear in the clouds or, you know, anything like that, you might want to calm public fears. So instead of four people close to the first person diagnosed with Ebola in the United States were quarantined in a Dallas apartment where the sheets, blah, 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 instead of leading with that, how about leading with the actual, real, true fact? And one of the few in those first several paragraphs, how about leading with none of the people thought to have had contact with the Ebola patient are showing symptoms of Ebola? How about that? How about that as a headline? How about that as a lead into the sentence? And like I said, this is a journalism thing, not a writing, you know, a language thing, and not necessarily about the... am I making sense?
Yeah, but that doesn't sell papers. That doesn't sell stories. It doesn't get people ginned up and excited. And the old style of journalism is dead. Most of what I read, I have to dissect, reinterpret, because most of this crap that I'm reading is merely a press release from somewhere else. They're not telling you anything. They're giving you a press release from a health official, from a hospital, or from whatever.
So much stuff is trying to be recast as link bait to get you to visit their site and look at their ads and stuff.
Right.
And I'm surprised it doesn't say, you know, man diagnosed with mysterious deadly illness. You'll be amazed at what happens next and horrified at what happens next.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and just bore people by reading this entire article, but I'm going to tell you, and nah, this was not close reading, it's not like editor kind of reading or anything, but it's reading. I didn't find anywhere in the text of this article that says he threw up outside the apartment.
Yeah, there is that little detail.
It's not yeah. just not.
Is there some kind of rule that the headline actually has to have anything to do with the story?
Well, it's kind of a rule, Waggy, that you don't make shit up. I mean, because then it's fiction and not journalism.
Well, but that's a headline to a different story. I mean, that, you know, apparently did happen. I heard a piece on that on NPR, and that it was just hosed down, which was probably fine because sunlight's a great disinfectant anyway.
Yeah, or maybe hit with a little bleach water. You know, there are bleach water stations all over. You know.
Well, and the water used to hose it down would have been chlorinated anyway,
right?
Because it's potable drinking water from, you know.
So you know, yeah, it is apparently a true fact, but it doesn't appear anywhere in the story. And yeah, it is kind of a copy editing rule that the and I would defer to Dr. John on this, but it's kind of a copy editing rule that whatever you're referring to in the headline, you should be able to find reference to it in the body of the article.
Are there any guidelines as to whether that should be, you know, early on or in the middle or at the end?
No, but in this case, Waggy, it's in none of the above. I mean, you go way, way, way down in, and I love some of this writing. Let's just play journalism ombudsman here for a moment. Here's a couple of paragraphs, and this is the exact way that it flows. Ebola can cause fever, bleeding, vomiting, and diarrhea and spreads through contact with bodily fluids such as blood or saliva. Duncan's case put U.S. health authorities and the public on alert over concern for the potential of the virus to spread from Liberia and two other impoverished West African countries, Guinea and Sierra Leone. The virus has killed at least 3,338 people in the worst such outbreak since the disease was identified in 1976. President Barack Obama... called Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings on Thursday and pledged federal agencies will remain in close coordination and reiterated his confidence in America's doctors and national health infrastructure to handle this case safely and effectively. Okay, everybody knows about the missing cabinet secretary, the secretary of Jesus, Barack. this is where, you know, and the secretary of Jesus, Barack, is basically the Key and Peele guy who does the translations, for anybody who's ever seen Key and Peele translate President Obama.
Yes.
And, of course, he couldn't... I understand. I'm kind of in a best-of-all-possible-worlds mode here, but I guess he couldn't do this, but I'm thinking that maybe the Secretary of Jesus, Barack, would look at him and say, Jesus, Barack, why don't you talk a little bit about the fact that Texas... has so many uninsured people, and Rick Perry doesn't want people being insured so that they can go to the goddamn hospital if they think they've got fucking Ebola.
Have you ever heard of Dr. Melissa Clouthier?
I don't think so.
She is a physician, and she commonly appears on our favorite Rupert Murdoch outlet, and... she's on my Twitter feed because I love to see the crazy shit she says. Just got a tweet from her. The irresponsible way the U.S. and the CDC is dealing with Ebola dwarfs Katrina already.
Oh, F me. Hey, yeah, because, see, I read that, you know, y'all were talking and I was scanning because I was going, you know, where's the vomit? Where's the vomit? Where's the vomit? Well, that's at least three more dinner hours I've just ruined.
How much fleet powder does somebody have to snort to come up with that kind of T-Billy stupidity?
Well, yeah, and because that line, and this is in quotes, in the President Obama called Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings, pledged federal agencies will remain in close coordination and reiterated his confidence in America's doctors and national health infrastructure to handle this case safely and effectively. Well, you know what? I don't have such confidence. And I'm not trying to get all panicky or anything. Or induce it in anyone else. I think we're doing a pretty good job so far of having a fairly rational discussion about this topic. But I don't have confidence in our doctors and our national health infrastructure. Because not everybody in this country has access to that national health infrastructure. if, God forbid, this thing did get loose, it would likely spread for reasons similar to the reasons that it has spread in Guinea and Sierra Leone and Liberia. Because people don't have access to appropriate medical care. And why is that so hard to figure out? Why is Rick Perry not being absolutely dunned into the dirt? Asking why he is putting, you know, never mind the headline that's not mentioned in the story here. How about a headline that says, why is Rick Perry putting millions of Texans and other and millions more uninsured Americans at risk?
Because they're pushing it right up the chain and saying Obama let Ebola into the country.
Yeah, Carol, I understand, but
Laura Ingraham just went there.
But I mean, I remember when
Ebola, Ebonics, coincidence?
Yeah, right. I remember when Bart Kopp would say, if the Democrats had a spine and he'd put ... why do I bother?
Mm-hmm.
But if the Democrats had a spine, you know, what they're saying on Fox doesn't matter. If the Democrats had a spine, they would be putting out press releases and, you know, hell, reaching out to what progressive broadcast infrastructure there is and saying, listen, let's ask why Rick Perry is putting uninsured Texans at risk. Because they can't and they will not go to the doctor if they get sick. And that enlarges a much broader spectrum of the healthcare debate. Because it's a real issue.
But don't you think now we're back to who this bought and paid for media? They're not going to say that.
Really? I mean, you don't think Tom Hartman would say that?
Well, Tom Hartman probably will say that if he hasn't already.
Hey, can we ask Sergi if Wendy Davis has said anything?
Hey, there's an idea, Sparky.
Good call.
Ball's in your court, Sergi.
You may not be listening. I don't know. But
sorry, y'all caught me right as I had taken a huge bite of this hamburger.
Oh, okay. But you got the question, right?
Yes, I did. Hold on. Got the drink machine right behind me. But basically, both Wendy Davis and Greg Abbott, during the September 30th debate, they were asked a question about Ebola. And Wendy, you know, gave a very excellent answer about, you know, saying, you know, taking a leadership role and, you know, coordinating with local and federal officials and the whole bit. I wasn't really paying attention to the Ebola question, to be honest, because there were other questions that really nailed Abbott.
Yeah, but
I mean, she's sorry.
But I mean, do you see the value of a line of thinking like that? I mean, it's Rick Perry and the Republican legislature of Texas that is putting at hazard millions of Texans who are uninsured. Because they won't be able. I mean, it costs, I mean, my God, how much must an isolation unit cost per day in care costs in a hospital?
I can't imagine if it's $500 for an aspirin.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so let's say one, and, you know, again, with the caveat.
Don't forget this is a for-profit hospital.
Right, but with the caveat, God forbid. But let's say somebody goes walking into a hospital with all the relevant symptoms, and they're uninsured. Well, if there's any suspicion at all that they're one of these people that was in contact with this guy, they're going to be isolated and quarantined, right?
in their home.
And then they're just on, and then they're just on the hook for the bill. I mean, is there a loophole in the Texas Medicaid law that says that you can't so much as own a cardboard box to live in if you want Medicaid in Texas? That says, oh, by the way, if you get hit by an epidemic disease, we'll cover it. I don't think so.
No. Yeah, it'll run, you know, a few thousand dollars a day, and you'll be billed for it.
So why, you know, I mean, and I'm talking, you know.
Which, of course, is another reason to stay out of the, you know, not to go to a doctor.
Right.
When you're sick.
I mean, I've been in that position. You know, you were mentioning earlier, Waggy, about how if you're trying to come to the United States just on a tourist visa and you don't have health care, it gets dicey. That gives me so much more respect for countries like France and Germany, because when I went over there, I was uninsured as all hell. Nobody asked me a single question. Come on in. Bienvenue à la belle France. Willkommen zu Deutschland. Nach Deutschland. I hate the prepositions. Whatever. Nobody asked me that. And those are healthcare systems where if something like this happened, and remember, you know, this guy passed through Brussels.
There's an American privilege working there, though. You know, it's the Americans that are, you know, evacuated at huge expense from Africa for treatment in the U.S.
Oh, sure. No, I don't challenge that in the least way.
And if you get sick in a, you know, quote, third world country, there's a good chance that the embassy will, you know, pretty much rescue you.
But hell, I didn't get sick per se, but I got robbed and I had to replace all of my, you know, Bob needs his little blood pressure pill.
Wonder why.
As may be occasionally noticeable. And you know, we toddled over to the German doctor's office. It was a Wednesday. And there's just an emergency clinic that's open because apparently German doctors take Wednesdays off too. But there was a beautiful, you know the Porsche 911 turbos that had the real wide hip stance. There was one of those parked in the back, so it's not like socialized medicine is forcing doctors to eat ramen in Germany. So we sit down and he says, "Ah, this is terrible. These medicaments were stolen from you in Belgium. It would not happen in Germany." And he says, "Tell me what they are." And I tell him, he says, "This is not the problem." And, you know, and I think, you know, I think I was out like $20 replacing my meds. And it was just easy. That does not happen in the United States. And yeah. Frankly, maybe I'm failing to communicate this. Maybe I'm filibobstering. If I am, I apologize. But this person who has been admitted for observation with symptoms in Washington D.C. I have learned to ask questions about insurance coverage. I mean, I've been uninsured. Thanks to Obamacare, I am insured now. But I've been uninsured. And I have, you know, I've had episodes where I just decided to quit eating for a couple of weeks and gut it out and drink a lot of water and, you know, get through it. Because the idea of having a $15,000 hospital bill when what they were going to do was look at me and go, "Yep, it's exactly what you said it was. Here. Let us give you a $300 bag of saline, and here's a $200 hit of morphine. That'll be $15,000, please." No, you don't go. And because the symptoms of this disease are such that it obviously fooled the people at this for-profit hospital, right? They sent him home with a handful of antibiotics. So it could happen, and I'm not being all paranoid like right wingers and saying, you know, maybe you get it from the toilet seat, you know, maybe if there's a toothpick in the toilet, Ebola can pole vault. I'm not doing that. But it is a reality that anybody, if and that means it's speculation, if anybody is quarantined and are on the hook for all of that cost, then how do we not look up and say that this is some sort of really sick, twisted system that says that people are at fault for things that they aren't at fault for? Because that's the only way you hang the cost of this on a perfectly innocent victim.
That's what for-profit healthcare is all about. I mean, you're profiting off of people's illness.
I get that, but what I'm asking is, how hard would it be to, I mean, because the right wing does it all the time. I heard the former right wing congressman today, once again, offering up a full throated defense of the Koch brothers. I mean, the memo must have gone down in a big way. But why can't our side do it? I mean, what if, and this is just a thought experiment, and I'm going to shut up in a minute. But what if that message that Rick Perry is endangering the entire population of Texas by not expanding Medicaid so that people who might be exposed to this can go to the damned hospital? What if that message was spread, you know, not just by, you know, a little hillbilly like me? Okay, I'm not so little. But what if it was being spread by Hartman and Ed and Stephanie and Malloy and Rick Smith?
It's a conspiracy.
Oh, you really want to have some fun. Rick Perry is a political has-been. It's got to be the Texas GOP, which is also, of course, endangered, currently in the process of endangering women's health.
Absolutely.
That can all be tied together in the same issue as it's Texas Republicans that are doing this.
Right. And I mean, it can be done. I mean, I think it would be fun. I think it would be fun to, because Rick Perry is not entirely done, Waggy. There's still people out there that say, you know, he's presidential timber now that he's got him some glasses.
Just like George W. Bush endangered this country until some extremists took advantage of it and murdered 3,000 of our people.
There you go. Now we're accomplishing all this on an extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. And yeah, it's making political hay out of something, but is that only bad if a Democrat does it?
For some reason, we seem to think we're supposed to be like above that. I've never agreed with that. I'm not saying go out and lie, but definitely tell the truth in a way that is compelling.
Well, you know, we'll know in maybe Monday, since this is Friday. We'll know if we, because we speculate and joke and josh and stuff from time to time, that we have secret listeners, because things will get said here, and then the next thing you know, they miraculously pop up somewhere else.
Yes.
You don't think any producers from MSNBC listen to your show?
Oh, I don't know. They're busy right now.
They got assistants, though. And the assistants are the ones that get the work done.
But, you know, if this thing pops up, if that notion should pop up, because this, I heard a statistic, was it yesterday, that there are now 10 million more insured people than there were a year ago because of Obamacare. That's a nice number.
Yeah.
It's still about 35 million off of where we need to be, right?
Right.
Right.
And in large part, that number is lower because of the 23 repig-licking governors who have dug their heels into the dirt and said that this, by God, is a hill that they're gonna let the poor die on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that number might be close. I mean, if 19 states account for 10 million uninsured being covered now, what would 23 more states account for? And one of them's Texas.
A whole bunch of people.
750,000 in Missouri, I think they said.
It just boggles the mind that why isn't Skeeter rising up saying, well, my buddy over there in Arkansas has got the coverage. Why don't I get it?
Well, one, because they try to keep that suppressed, I think, Sparky. But two, because Skeeter don't have skin in the game yet. Now, if, on the other hand, somebody over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda was to say, why does somebody who gets Ebola in West Virginia not, why are they going to be covered by that Obamacare and somebody who gets it in Texas isn't? Then it's a different matter. Because that megaphone, by God, works. That dog hunts.
Yes, it does. Oh, I got to pop in here for some breaking news.
Oh, yes.
A district court judge in Kansas City just ruled same-sex marriage ban unconstitutional.
In Missouri.
In Missouri.
Oh.
So, another one bites the dust, huh?
Oh, people's going to be getting gay married all over the place.
Oh, I tell you what. Those sunset ceremonies there on Lake Hooterville.
And good for them.
I'm telling you what, I've got some friends that are getting married on the 2nd of January, and they've already got their wedding planned in Illinois because they couldn't get married here, and I have a feeling that's about to get changed.
Well, but don't you think, I mean, I'm sure the Missouri AG will ask the circuit for whichever circuit covers Missouri to stay that.
He's a dick, but I don't think he's going to win it.
No, but the court might still stay. It might still stay the decision to keep any of that gay marrying from happening until the rats get a look at it.
I don't know. This has been rolling pretty quick across the country. I mean, I hate to break in with some good news, but
no, that's beautiful. Carol, do you happen to know what circuit Missouri's in?
I'm gonna find out. Hang on a second.
Oh, and by the way, while Carol is researching, I want to send thanks out to Robert and to Thomas, first in this evening, helping out with the fundraising on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That means that we are now up to $85 of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, so we got $115 to go, and then Shirley will pony up and double the money. Just remember that until the website is back live, just log into PayPal and use bobkincaid@gmail.com as the address that you use to send in your contribution. That's the same. It's the same way it works on the website. It's just that the button doesn't, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, $115. Maybe that's not impossible in the next 42 minutes.
Bob, if you can't hear any of us, it's because you went Skypey on us.
Oh, no, I hear you just fine.
I thought it was just me.
No. It's Skype.
Hello.
Yep, we're all here.
Oh, okay. Now you're better.
Yeah.
Now he's back. I got it. A judge struck down part of Missouri's gay marriage ban for the first time on Friday, ordering the state to recognize same-sex marriages legally performed in other states, saying state laws banning the union single out gay couples for no logical reason. The order means such couples will be eligible to sign up for a wide range of tax, health insurance, veterans, and other benefits now afforded to opposite-sex married couples. Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster, who has defended the state's ban on gay marriage, said his office was reviewing the ruling. The decision comes in a lawsuit filed by 10 same-sex couples who legally married outside the state. The ACLU, which is helping the couples, noted the ruling was a first for Missouri. And that was Jackson County Circuit Court Judge J. Dale Young.
Oh, wait. Jackson County Circuit Judge?
Yep.
Oh, dear me.
Yep.
That I mean, you realize that's a state court judge.
Yes, it is.
That's not a federal judge.
Nope.
So that means that, so if there's an intermediate appeals court, it goes there, and then it goes to the Missouri Supreme Court.
Yep.
Takes a little trip down Jeff City.
Yes, it does. The case is among at least three challenging Missouri's ban. There's a federal challenge in Kansas City and St. Louis. Cases focus on city officials who issued marriage licenses to four same-sex couples to trigger a legal test of the ban. The lawsuits are based on the same argument that led the U.S. Supreme Court last year to overturn part of the Defense of Marriage Act that denied a tax help and other benefits to legally married gay couples. In Missouri, Young Say expected the state Supreme Court to provide the last word on all of the important legal issues presented by this case. Same-sex now legal in 19 states in the District of Columbia. The ACLU has cases pending in 13 other states with five cases currently before federal appeals courts. So my suspicion is that one's probably, I'm sure it's going to get challenged, but I still think.
From what you said, though, it sounds like it's just recognizing same-sex marriages that were performed in other states.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't yet legalize it in Missouri.
No, but I'll tell you what, it isn't going to take long. That's generally the first, I think that's pretty much the way it's been challenged in a lot of states, and that's like the first domino to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And the toughest one, yeah.
The Homer sectional agenda is creeping across the country.
Well, you're good.
You know it. Oh, by the way, y'all are familiar with the kerfuffle in Colorado over the teaching of history in the United States, right?
Yes.
This is the kerfuffle that was significant enough to cause a bunch of high school students to go on strike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a new development in that case, and I thought we needed a giggle. A member of the Colorado Board of Education, according to a story in Salon, board member Pam Mazanek is angry about the AP history standards. Pam Mazanek, a businesswoman and representative for Colorado's 4th Congressional District on the state's Board of Education, shared her opinions about the state's AP U.S. history curriculum last week, jumping into an ongoing Facebook discussion among members of the Douglas County School District. Salon picked the story up from Talking Points Memo. And, of course, being a right-winger and a paranoid, Ms. Mazanek declared that the curriculum was shaped by people with a particular agenda. She then, here's the quote. The article says, she then went on to say that the current course framework does too much to downplay our noble history. Now, this is an adult female that is allowed to walk at large without a minder. Nobody's around with the Thorazine dart blowgun or anything. And she said, I've read the framework and the sample test, and my concern is an overly negative view of our history and many of our historical figures, if mentioned. I think our students deserve to have all perspectives, including the negative viewpoints on the motivations, but also the positive viewpoints. If we want our students to be able to craft an argument and provide evidence, they should be exposed to more than one viewpoint. You know what viewpoint she once offered?
Jesus?
No. She wants high school children in AP history classes in Colorado to be told that the United States ended slavery voluntarily.
You're kidding.
Well, the Civil War wasn't exactly, like a mosh pit party.
Oh, I know. She continues and says, I've spoken with some history professors and with very impressive credentials. These are the history professors that live in her head.
Name them.
Right. who told me this new framework doesn't surprise them and is aligned with the content of college-level history courses that downplay our noble history and accentuate the negative view. As an example, I note our slavery history. Yes, we practiced slavery, but we also ended it voluntarily at great sacrifice while the practice continues in many countries still today. Shouldn't our students be provided that viewpoint? This is part of the argument that America is exceptional. Does our APUSH framework support or denigrate that position?
No. No,
Didn't Britain end slavery voluntarily before we did?
That they did.
But the fact is, we didn't end slavery voluntarily. It was an ugly, bloody fight.
Yeah, the compare and contrast is very educational.
Right. The South started in order to perpetuate, to keep slavery. And in virtually every, at one point in time, every seceding state said, yeah, well, we're getting into this. We're going to get into this because we want to keep our slaves. So I don't know what she means when she says that, yes, we practiced slavery, but we also ended it voluntarily at great sacrifice. Now that sentence could be made accurate had Ms. Mazanek ever had, like, AP English, because if you said, yes, we practiced slavery, but we also ended it involuntarily at great sacrifice, then it becomes an accurate statement. But this woman, and you know, bless his heart, Mr. Stress is kicking furniture right now. The thing is, there's this meme that runs through the booger-eaten right wing that says that, and oh Lord, you can try it from Oklahoma to Texas to Arkansas all the way over to Florida, and you know. The Civil War was not about slavery.
It was the War of Northern Aggression.
It was about economics, as if slavery were somehow divorced from Southern economics, but we'll just blow past that one, right?
I thought it was about states' rights.
It was about states' rights.
I don't think this word voluntarily means what she thinks it means.
Thank you, Inigo Montoya.
You killed my father, prepared to die. Yeah. Oh, it's another one of those moments when I desperately miss Joe Bagent.
Well, just to tie something, a loose end that bugging me when you mentioned it, Mr. Duncan probably had an ancestor that came from South Carolina. Wasn't there a lot of Scotch people settled in South Carolina?
All over the South. Scots-Irish. You betcha.
Mm-hmm. So there was somebody down there that, by the name of Duncan, that owned slaves, and then the slaves got sent back to Liberia.
And notice that the 7 months pregnant woman that he helped into a cab who died, notice that her name was Marthalene Williams. That's not exactly an ancient African tribal name either. Because, see, some slaves were transported as a sort of pilot program.
Yeah, after the Civil War.
Waggy, I may be mistaken, but I think there were even some prior to the Civil War.
Yeah, some prior, and also I think there was a fairly large contingent afterward. Yeah, it was an ongoing thing for a while. I mean, my history is my poorest subject, so please correct me.
Well, I don't have a definitive answer right now. Oh, wait.
Bob, can you repeat the what voluntarily did what?
Oh, okay. Let me see if I can. Oh, dear. Hold on.
And while you're looking, because I'm just thinking back to, you know, several times when you have stated how, you know, the Confederate States of America and those who were fighting for it were not actually Americans at that point in time.
Right, it's true, and they would have been the first to tell you.
Right, and so, you know, if the statement was that the United States of America voluntarily ended slavery, I guess you could squeak in a technicality and say, okay, you know, the government out of Washington, D.C., headed by Republican Lincoln,
13th Amendment,
voluntarily, right, did all of that, and then 700,000 people had to die.
Well, actually, Sal, the timing is actually backwards from that, because the 13th Amendment doesn't get passed until after the Civil War.
Yeah, actually, you're right. You are right.
So to the extent that the Civil War prefaced the 13th Amendment, I don't think you can. I guess you could try to shoehorn that or bootstrap the hardball or whatever it is right wingers do.
No.
Yeah.
But
because the implication was that the entire country did agree democratically that that was to be the case. Democratically, or through representatives, or you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to
Sal, that is not at all an invalid point. It's just that you have to. And far be it from me to say that a bunch of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing freaks would ignore the Civil War. But, yeah. Meanwhile, AP U.S. history teacher at Wheat Ridge High School in Colorado by the name of Stephanie Rossi said, "The idea that the United States voluntarily gave up slavery is an outright misrepresentation of history. The United States engaged in a civil war to end slavery. There was nothing voluntary about it. I'm just flabbergasted at anyone who would make that claim." Flabbergasted.
Bad teachers.
Yeah. And then there's Pastor Patrick Demmer, who is a Denver-based civil rights activist. Pastor Patrick Demmer said, "She's willfully ignorant at best, or she is racially disingenuous at worst. She shouldn't be on the education board. What her comment and that whole movement is trying to basically do is repaint history in a way that takes away the ugliness and the hurt and the abuse that the African American in America suffered and endured to get to where we are right now." And then, you know, there's the place that I go. How many hundreds of thousands of Union soldiers who died, many of whom were African American. I mentioned it on the program some time back. We went up to my buddy and colleague Bo Webb and I went up one day in D.C. to Ben's Chili Bowl to have the iconic half-smoked hot dog. And lo and behold, across the street there, tucked away, you know, out of the way, was a monument with hundreds of thousands of names on it. And they were the names of every African-American former slave who served under the Stars and Stripes in the Union Army in the Civil War. And to say, and for this woman to say that slavery was given up voluntarily is just spitting on their graves and everyone else who served in the Union Army. In the American Army.
My question is we're 150 years down the road and we're still arguing about this shit?
Well, no, we aren't, Carol. The mouth-breathing, strychnine-swilling, floor-rolling, snake-juggling, birther, deather, tenther, booger-eaters are.
The South will rise again.
The ones that still fly the stars and bars.
Hell yeah. I've got a story here, and I have to share this because it's a delight. There may be mass cackling, which is fine by me. I love it when that happens on this program.
I'm going to go all Betty Rubble on this, aren't I?
That's exactly what I was thinking, Carol, and I have only the fondest hopes. This may be an argument for the existence of a supreme being or a deity or a higher power or something. Headline, John McCain wants Lindsey Graham to run for president, and Graham's thinking about it.
Oh, Bob.
president of the new Confederate States of America, right, Bob?
Well, precisely. South Carolina GOP Senator Lindsey Graham is thinking about running for president. Graham told the Weekly Standard in a lengthy interview that he isn't crazy about other potential Republican candidates' positions and that he's been encouraged by Senator John McCain to consider entering the race for the GOP presidential nomination.
Waggy, Sal, get the fainting couch in here.
You know who just went screaming out the door is living in South Carolina.
Oh, my lucky stars. It's going to be fun.
My friends, I've strongly encouraged him to give it a look, McCain told the Standard. I think Lindsey has vast and deep experience on these issues that very few others have, my friends. I happen to have, I like a lot of these guys. I like Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, Ted Cruz has gone out of his way to tell people how much he agrees with me on national security. And then whoever wrote this article said, not sure why McCain felt the need to throw a wacko bird into that mix.
He definitely had a deep experience, but I don't think that's what he's talking about.
And then there's, stop it, Devin. Then there's the pull quote from Lindsey himself. You know, sometimes I can almost hear John McCain uttering those words from Gone with the Wind. You know what you need? You need a man to kiss you. You need a man to kiss you and kiss you well, who knows how to do it. And I'm the man.
No.
No. No, Lindsey said...
Be nice, the poor guy was tortured as a prisoner of war.
The article said, Graham is fed up with President Obama's inscrutable foreign policy. One wonders, but no, I'm not gonna. That's Devin's job.
No inscrutable foreigners.
It's just such a goddamn shame that foreigners are inscrutable. It ain't like I don't try. And thinks he is capable of repairing the damage the next president will inherit from the current one. If I get through my general election, if nobody steps up in the presidential mix, if nobody's out there talking, me and McCain have been talking. Hold me, John! I may just jump in to get to make these arguments.
Did you hear what he said about Marco Rubio?
No.
Well, they said, isn't Marco Rubio already talking like you and McCain? And Lindsey said, well, perhaps, but he's a good guy, but after doing immigration with him, we don't need another young guy not quite ready. He's no Obama by any means, but he's so afraid of the right, and I've let that go.
I'll worry about it tomorrow.
Oh, my God, I just had a image. A Marco Polo game.
Marco!
Smoke Lindsey!
No, I just saw that, and I'm thinking, please.
I know, you can't go tagging them under the water.
Oh.
Is that what they're calling it these days?
When is he and John McCain just going to admit they have sex? I mean,
as soon as marriage equality comes to South Carolina.
No.
Oh my God, that's precious. Please, please. I mean, this is where we fire up the Ricky Bobby clip. Please, dear baby Jesus, little baby Jesus. Oh, yeah. Hey, good news. Thank you very kindly to David. We are now at $100 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge.
Woohoo!
We might be able to do that in 21 minutes.
Hey, can I mention something, Bob, since you forgot to?
Yes.
I have 4 U.S. Postal Service shipping boxes ready to be loaded with smoky ghost cheese or jalapeno pistachios.
And we know we have some recent recipients of same, correct?
Yes. I don't. You haven't got any reports?
We're still waiting for the review.
Okay. Two people got...
Tom has it, right?
Tom and Jay Cruzen got the cheese on Wednesday, and Betsy has the jalapeno pistachio. She said she's going to dive into them this weekend.
Hot diggity.
So your choice, if you make a $100 contribution, you just tell Bob that you want
the pistachio,
smoky ghost cheese or the pistachios, and send him your address, and I'll get it in the mail, lickety-split.
Absolutely. And
Bob.
Yes.
Bob, I forgot to tell you, I have your box ready to go.
Oh, beautiful.
And I've also thrown in a jar of peach preserves.
Not peaches. I simply adore peaches.
Absolutely. No, those are the peaches. I went out to the orchard, and Katie makes puts up a ton of preserves, and she makes the best peach jam.
So oh, that'll be heavenly.
That'll be in your box too.
And you know what I will do with them? I mean, yes, wonderful on sourdough bread, butter, that kind of thing. For a very long time, I've been terribly fond of peach preserves on good vanilla ice cream.
That sounds pretty good.
Oh, and to have it made with real fresh, you know, tree-ripened peaches, I'll probably have to crush up a couple of metformins and snort them through a straw. But, yeah.
I have to go with the nuts because I'm in Nutland.
No, that's South Carolina, Nutland. No, I'm sorry. That was just wrong.
No, where I live is Nutland. I saw an SUV yesterday with a State of Jefferson sticker on the top of the back window.
No, really?
And I thought, you're driving around a $40,000 car in your State of Jefferson. Do you know what will happen if we go State of Jefferson? The roads here will go to shit, and your $40,000 car will be torn up. That was my mental...
Oh, yeah, it'll all be four-wheeling.
Because we're like a red state in Northern California. I mean, we get more money from Southern California, I mean, from the state than we put in.
Well, Southern California kind of carries Northern California. I mean, every, you know, north of the Bay Area, right?
Right, well, but anything north of Sacramento, we don't have the population to match what they got below Sacramento and Bay Area and everything.
And so that means if you want infrastructure in sparsely populated areas, you need the tax base to carry that. So yeah,
correct.
Right. So the state of Jefferson will probably not even have gravel roads. It would have something like, oh, I don't know, muddy wagon ruts.
Yeah, at least. I mean, you get off Interstate 5 in my little town, the roads are the shits, but Interstate 5 is beautiful. They just rebuilt the whole thing all the way through here and upgraded the concrete. And because they did, when they built it, they poured concrete instead of asphalt in the valley area because they were afraid the asphalt would melt on hot days because it's so fucking hot here. So they have to go through and they have to grind down the concrete and put some kind of patch material on it every so many years to make it smooth again.
Nice. Yeah. And
you guys, Sparky, are basically, I mean, you've been ignored for a long time. I mean, when I moved to California, it occurred to me immediately that what they call Northern California is basically just barely into Central California in the San Francisco area, right?
Correct. That's why I always say I live in the real Northern California.
Yeah, because the Bay Area is central. And I'm slowly learning my California geography.
The Bay Area is Central California, right?
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. So,
all you got to do is look at a map.
Yeah, there's a whole lot more California up there. Right.
There is a whole lot more, but it's like, you know, anybody who, like, sets terminology or politics considers that, I don't know, what, part of Oregon or something.
Yeah.
Hello.
Oh, by the way, I gotta throw props out to our buddy Tony, who, in response to Carol's having posted the story about Lindsay saying he may ruin, Tony responded, "Run, no, Lindsay, you'll skip."
oh, that's terrible.
And but then there was the quote about me and McCain, and that got under Tim's skin. Me and McCain, what happened to English? What happened to English only? Well, no, the proper would be me and Rhett. Jesus, I should be ashamed.
And one other thing, Bob, I'm going to have to unfortunately drop off now that I've had the opportunity to speak up. But I was looking to donate yesterday, and the website was still down.
Yes, it is. Sadly, it is, Sal.
Yeah, and so I went into PayPal and I tried to remember what email address to use, and I ended up, out of the recesses of my mind, pulling up a bobkincaidhorn@gmail.com address, and I tried to PayPal you at that address, and it's still unclaimed.
Right.
So I just wanted to
call it back. Call it back. Cancel the transaction. Anybody who has sent anything to anything but bobkincaid@gmail.com, call it back. Because, let's see, I know of one that went to bob@headon.com, and that is...
Yes.
And that one, I don't even know who owns that domain.
Okay.
But it's just bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Okay.
And, you know, don't apologize, Sal. Thank you for being there. But, yeah, the PayPal button being MIA has been a bit of a challenge, to say the least.
Bob?
Yeah, Larry.
It's Larry. Hi. Hi, folks. I wanted to get in touch with you about, I've been asking about how to get you out here.
Well, let's do that off air, okay?
Okay, so I just do that through your email.
We'll just do it through email.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure. I'm not trying to cut you short, but that's kind of inside baseball out in the weeds.
Okay, so what's been happening today? Anything, or it's the same old as far as our foreign policy and what we're doing with...
I kind of hate to think of this program as being the same old, Larry, but... Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about the program being the same old. I'm talking about... the events that are happening in the world.
Oh, I understand. Carol, that was almost a Betty Rubble.
Well, I've got an image for you, Larry.
Okay, because I'm getting tired of Obama and the Congress and all that nonsense. It just is, okay.
I think
that's all right. Just wait a few years. We'll get a new set.
I think this was on the Colbert Report. I saw it somewhere on Facebook.
All right, appreciate
it. One of the black dress ISIL guys with the black flag, and the actual scientific symbol for the Ebola virus wrapped around him like a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an image for you of our world today.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's which one's scarier, ISIL or Ebola?
Yeah. You know, I wonder if comparative politics class is going to drive me crazy. Probably, I'll deal with it. But
just
take a deep breath and be the ball.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to share something here because I think this has rather profound relevance going back to our Ebola discussion. This comes from our buddy Timothy. He says, in June, my grandpa died in Atlanta after months of various organ failure and brain death. In August, Nigerian customs nearly refused to allow his corpse entry for fear of Ebola. After the funeral festivities, we left my grandfather's hometown and flew 280 miles to catch our flight to Atlanta. They gave us each Ebola questionnaires to fill out and present to airport security. I'm slightly ashamed to say that my family lied about attending any funerals. We then had a chuckle about what person would actually check off any of the Ebola symptoms listed on the card, knowing they would never make their flight. Now that Eric Duncan is in the news, the Liberian government is saying he broke the law by lying on the little Ebola card they gave him while he was checking his luggage. I've never thought much about whether Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was a good leader or not, but the soundbite CNN crafted yesterday made me view her as just another talking head world leader. Her Excellency called Mr. Duncan's actions unfathomable. Remind me, where do African presidents go for minor surgeries? Europe and Arabia. I find it unfathomable that any leader would fail to improve her nation's health system after 8 years in office and then expect her citizens to act otherwise. The media say how irresponsible he might have infected other people. I hope not. But Timothy says, hey, most humans ain't much interested in sacrificing themselves for the greater good. Perhaps Mr. Duncan figured they may prosecute me, but at least I won't be dead.
Great comment.
Was that Tim from Atlanta?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Haven't heard from him in years.
Oh, no. He writes every now and then, and I share his emails.
Well, he used to be in the Skype group years ago.
Well, you're welcome to come back any old time.
And entirely true. I've been doing some international travel and get a health card, too, to fill out. And you just look over them going, you know, have you had a fever within the last whatever months? Who doesn't have a fever of some kind? I get fevers for allergies, but no, right. No, because they're looking for yellow fever.
Right, but now, I mean, self-reporting is great, but if it is a question of one's continued survival, I mean, let us not sit here and act like, because there's a certain amount of privilege involved in presuming that people in the affected nations aren't looking at the rest of the world and going, wait a minute, they fly all the white people out when they get sick.
Hey.
You know, I'm getting on a plane, too.
Why'd you have to go and pull the race card?
I know.
Sorry. That's what I get.
But, I mean, it's true, isn't it?
Yes.
If you had the means to get your family out before they could get sick, I mean, you get my meaning. Frankly, the Liberians and the Sierra Leoneans and the Guineans are being surprisingly well behaved under the circumstances. I don't think Americans would behave that well. I'm sorry, Carol. I didn't mean to just run all over you.
No, what I was going to say was, I had a woman just go ape shit on me today because they let, quote, those Ebola people into the country. And it's Obama's fault that Ebola is here because he let those Ebola people. And I'm like, name one person those Ebola people have infected. They haven't infected anybody. They weren't released from the hospital until they were cured.
I mean, does it not appear that the what were described as highly experimental drugs for treating the Ebola virus, does it not appear that they look kind of successful?
Yeah, that's the point.
Well, that was in the trial. Side effects are as yet unknown.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give a shit what the side effects were. If I had it, use it.
Right.
Well,
I mean,
if it kills you 6 months later, that's, you know.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if it
nice,
makes,
but not really great.
If it makes a duck's ass grow on the top of your head, you know, bring me the duck. You know, as opposed to dying, vomiting, and bleeding from every orifice, I mean.
Well, what's his name? Testified in front of Congress, so it must have worked.
Well, how about that?
But somebody else brought up quite a long time ago, you know, had this this outbreak started in a, quote, first world white country, you know, we'd have a vaccine by now.
Well, because I don't think it would have become an epidemic.
Viruses are particularly, you know, vaccines are particularly effective for viruses.
I mean, let's remember one thing, Laggy.
Established that people who actually survive Ebola don't get it again. So there is developed immunity, which means vaccines are likely to be very effective once we develop one.
Exactly.
But
the other, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, hi, Kath.
Hi. Go ahead, Meg.
I'm done. Go.
I was just going to say part of the reason that so many are dying over there, they don't have the medical facilities here. And with the vomiting and the diarrhea, they become so dehydrated. And once you become dehydrated, your systems just go.
Sure. It's not that they don't have, from what the reporting I've heard, it's not that they don't have the facilities. It's just that nobody is willing to treat them. Nobody's willing to keep giving them fluids because of the risk of bottling.
But that's why, I mean, here, you know, they're put under great medical care.
Yeah. And another point that kind of got overlooked is that, you know, this gentleman from Liberia, okay, he's going to rack up tens of thousands of dollars of medical bills, and there's a really good chance he's going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Liberia, and he's never going to pay.
Right.
He's going to go back home.
Right.
Exactly. And just a couple of other things to note about this. One, generally speaking, and I think this is true, the two single factors that are most critically important in the spread of disease to epidemic and pandemic levels are ignorance and neglect.
Mm-hmm.
It was ignorance of how the Black Plague spread that wiped out a third of the world's population. Okay, and frankly, it was deliberate and overt neglect that allowed HIV to spread the way it did in the early days of what was then referred to as AIDS in the United States.
The gay plague.
You couldn't even get Ronald Reagan to acknowledge its existence.
You couldn't get the Surgeon General
to
acknowledge.
Right, and they are both rightly damned for it. And, you know, the other aspect is ignorance. In that like I said at the beginning of the program, we don't think about underdeveloped nations unless they've got something that we want. And so what? And then we say, you know, ooh, they've got an epidemic. And meanwhile, you know, good old-fashioned Calvinist Christianity is sitting back there going, well, you know, if God liked them a little better. And I don't like talking about it in those terms, but I think we have to deal with facts, don't we?
Yes, and it's time, Bob.
It is time. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Waggy and Carol and Sparky and Todd and Kath and Larry and Anatole and Sal and Sergi and Devin. Thank you, one and all, for a rousing, extraordinary, ordinary roundtable this Friday on the front porch. Thanks to everybody listening in and participating in whatever way you do. Thanks to David and Robert and Thomas for helping out this evening. We are only $100 away from meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, and hopefully the website will be back up by Monday. So anybody listening to this in delay, if you want to help, it's help that's needed, because we always need help to keep all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in our chat room, the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. Please remember the all in with Chris Hayes, All in America, Coal, begins this Monday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, y'all.